So we all come here for a reason. Some people have a very definite reason. Other people just don't know the reason why they come here. But more or less it will be dukkha. Well, we in the West have a lot of dukkha. What is dukkha? It's not only suffering. This is a more or less mistranslation of this word. Dukkha means, it's a container. It means restlessness. It means discontent. It means suffering. It means pain. It means all the unpleasant things that we experience. This is called dukkha. So even when we think about just being interested in this topic or that topic, or this way or that way, or this city or that city, then this is just a means to avoid our dukkha. Because if you are completely satisfied with whatever is just right now at the moment, there wouldn't be any interest going in any other kind of direction. So any kind of interest, any kind of restlessness, any kind of looking into this or looking into that, actually means that we are evading something that is just right now going on within our heart. And that is one form of dukkha. Unpleasantness, displeasantness, discomfort. That makes us looking for something else. We just don't want this unpleasantness ruling our heart. So we're looking out for something more pleasant. And even if it's just going out for a drink, or having something to eat, or even having a snack. There's something displeasant within our heart. The most obscure thing within our life is our own heart. We just don't know anything about it. We just know how to act, how to speak, and how to think. But we don't know why we act, why we think, and why we speak. This is hidden from ourselves. And because of that, because most of our motivation, most of our intentions are hidden from ourselves, we are apt to do things that bring us unpleasant results. Most of the time we act or speak or think, we use these three doors. It is because there's something happening just right now in the heart that we do not like. A person that is completely satisfied, a person that is completely happy and contented, he doesn't want to change anything. He's just content. Or there's just contentedness. And there's no trace of unhappiness or discontent within his heart that makes him move on. If you want to find this kind of contentment, this way of happiness or peacefulness or however you call it, then we have to bring the mind to calm. Then we have to calm the mind completely down. It is like we are running our car and then we turn off the engine. Then it becomes really quiet and the car doesn't move anymore. So we have to turn down our engine to experience the calmness and happiness of the mind. And that is called samadhi. Samadhi is the training of concentration. It's a training of getting into one point. One-pointedness just means one point. It's not duality anymore. When we look at our life, when we look at the world, when we look at the universe, it's always duality. I and you. Here and there. The observer and the object observed. That is called duality. Once the object and the observer that observes the object become one, what is left? One-pointedness. And the duality disappears. So that's when we reach that kind of state of samadhi, that means we are one-pointed and duality has disappeared. And how can there be unhappiness in this form or in this state? It cannot be there. One-pointedness is just one-pointedness. There is no dukkha, there is no form, there is nothing that disturbs us in this kind of state. So, for people who are interested, what is this all about? Buddhism. What is it? What is called Nibbana? That's where they have to go, if they really want to find out. So they have to stop the engine running and see what is left. And what is left is the preview of Nibbana. Tananchan Mahabua puts it very frankly. He says, this kind of apana samadhi, that is the deep state of samadhi, is the Nibbana of the little man. So everybody who trains his mind can do it. There is no question about it. But the difficulties come with the practice. We cannot just stop the engine because we don't have the key that turns around and stops the engine. So we have to develop the skill of calming our mind down. To calm our mind down is like taming a wild animal. First, you catch that wild animal. Then you tie a rope around its neck. And then you fix it to a pole. And you don't let it run away. The wild animal, the moment it sees that it's tied to a pole, it tries to run away. If the rope is fixed enough, it cannot escape. So sooner or later, it will lie down. And then, later on, it will go and sleep or go to rest. So, that's what we have to do with our minds. We have to tie it firmly to the pole. The pole is the meditation object. It can be the word Buddha, 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 or Dhammo, 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 or Sangha, Sangha, Sangha. Mental repetition of this word. And nothing else. From the moment we open our eyes till the time we close our eyes. This is just one object. Or we can use the breath. The breath at the tip of the nose. Just the tip of the nose. We want just one point of concentration. If we want to enter one-pointedness, you can have only one point. And that is the tip of the nose because the breath is there. The feeling of the breath going in and going out is there the strongest. So we keep our attention there. Or we keep our attention on the Buddha. Or we are combining them. We can use Buddha, Bud with the breathing in, or Do with the breathing out. That's a combination. These are all crutches. Crutches that help us to tame our mind. Crutches to help to fix our mind to one point. We do that until the Buddha disappears. Not because we're thinking something else. No, because we cannot even think anymore. This word Buddha. The mind gets so centered. It gets so solid. It gets solid as a rock. That it even cannot think this one word anymore. And that's the end. That's where we're going to get into one-pointedness. The same will happen with the breath. The breath will become so subtle, so extremely subtle, that we are going to lose the notion of the breath. Once the breath disappears, then we switch to the one who knows that the breath disappears. And what happens then is that in the beginning our body disappears and then the world disappears. Once we get back out, the world comes back again. But in the time in between that, we have entered one point of mind. We have seen that there is something else. Something else. Something we most probably none of you has ever experienced. If you have experienced it, you will call it a wonder. It's so enormous, wondrous, wondrous state of mind that the moment you get out, you want to go in again. And there's nothing wrong with it. It is our true home. So the task is simple. Well, we just keep our mind on one point. But the human mind, or especially the Western mind, is so trained of doing 10 things at the same time that it cannot do these very simple tasks. Just stay the whole day. We have nothing else to do the whole day. We take holiday for 4 days. Now, when we take holiday from ourselves. We stop the engine. If you go with your car and go to a nice place, you don't let the car run. You stop the car and you rest. And that's what we're doing here. We're going to stop our mind from turning around and turning around and turning around. Because it has done that from the moment we can remember to today. During the day, we think, we dream, and in the night, we dream. The mind never stops working. Can you imagine how tired the mind must be? When you do that with your body, after 3 days you will break down. Because the body just cannot take the work anymore. But the mind is something that we have never considered. When I talk about the mind, I mean also the heart. The heart and the mind are one unity. When I talk about the mind, then I mean more the rational part of the heart. And when I talk about the heart, then I mean more the emotional part. But both of them, the unity, is called citta. So the citta has never rested. Why don't we give it a break? Why don't we send it and sleep for a while? Just take the burden off the citta. And then we know another reality. We know our true home. We know that there is something beyond this universe, beyond everything that we see, everything that we encounter. And that is, for most of the people, a very valuable experience. So we need to do that. And whatever it takes, we will do it. Don't we? It's something within us. We cannot buy it. We cannot look for it. It's not sold on the marketplace. It has been with us all our life, not only this life, but the previous life. It's been there all the time. But we don't care to look. So that's why we want to go there. Just have a look. Just have an understanding what it means to be free from burden, to be free from discomfort, to be happy and contented, to be completely satisfied and to complete at ease. But we have to do one thing. And that is taming the mind. So whatever it takes, we will do that. We just fix our attention to the one thing. If we think a lot, then the word, the repetition of the word Buddha or Dhamma or Sangha is the best thing. While we think Buddha, we cannot think anything else. So, then the mind gets pretty fast quiet. Because it cannot stray out in the past and in the future. It cannot think about this or it cannot think about that. So that will give a bit of peace in our mind. We just think about the word Buddha. And the Buddha stands for the teaching of the Lord Buddha. The Buddha stands for the Four Noble Truths. For the truth of dukkha, for the cause of dukkha, for the end of dukkha, and for the path leading to the end of dukkha. The path leading to the end of dukkha has three columns. The first column is the column of sila. That means five precepts. We keep them. No question, we keep them. Not harming any living being. Not taking what is not given. Not telling lies or using harsh speech. Not indulging into sexual misconduct. And not taking drugs and alcohol that reduce our mindfulness or completely make mindfulness go away. Mindfulness in Pali is sati. Sati is the basis of practice. Without any mindfulness, we don't know what we are doing. People who have been drunk know that experience. They don't remember the next day what they have done. That is the complete loss of mindfulness. During the day, we still have bits and pieces of mindfulness. We think we know what we are doing, or we think we want to do this or that. Once we put it into action, our mindfulness goes. It looks for the results that we think that we get from this action. And so our mindfulness is not there with what we actually do. When we experience something pleasant, then we run away. We run away with our thoughts how we can get more of it. When we experience something unpleasant, we run away with our thoughts how we can get rid of it. So we will never actually are with what is there. With what is there is either pleasant or unpleasant or neutral. It's a feeling. But instead of being with this feeling, experience what this feeling is all about. Experience the power of this feeling that drives us to do this or do that. That we don't know, because the moment we have this feeling, we run away. And it's a bit ironical, we run even away from our pleasant feeling. We want more of them. The moment we encounter them, we want to prolong them, we want more of them, or we want to get them back in the future. And that's why we are not with a pleasant thing or unpleasant thing or neutral thing. We are always out in our mind. We are always out in some sort of virtual reality. We are never in the reality of what is happening just right now here in our body or here in our heart. We are always thinking about this or thinking about that. Running away from this, running away from that. And that's why the mind is so wild. That's why the mind cannot stay with one object for even, in the beginning, for even 10 seconds. It tries to escape. Looks, if this is the right thing or not the right thing, doubt comes in, laziness comes in, tiredness comes in, or whatever. We all face these things. The moment we start practicing, we all face these things. So we have to overcome them. We have to put some determination and some effort in our practice. Whatever you do in the world, you need to learn it. You don't mind going to university for 4 years because you want to have your degree. So you study. Some people study very hard. They study 10 or 15 hours a day to get their degree. So why don't you study a little bit of putting the mind to the rest? Or why don't we practice? Why after 5 minutes we want to go out and do something else? Now what with our determination to develop this skill of going into samadhi, all what we have to do is put our mind on this one point. Once we put our mind on this one point, we have mindfulness that the mind is at this point. We know that the breath comes in, or we know that the breath goes out. We know that the breath is shallow, or we know that the breath is deep. We know that the Buddha is fast, or we know that the Buddha is slow. We know that the Buddha has depth, or we know that the Buddha has shallow. That is the thing that we know. Once we see, and we see it only when we are mindful, the mind goes out for pleasure or goes for a stroll, then we just grab it at its tail and put it back. There is the time. That's all what it's necessary. We don't have to force the Buddha. We don't have to force the breath. We don't have to change the breath, or we don't have to change the Buddha. The Buddha itself will change, and the breath itself will change. It all changes. We only grab the tail of our escaping mind and put it back to the object. Sounds very easy. But that is where all our effort goes. That's the only thing where our effort and determination goes. Not to let the mind go out for a stroll. Now it's the time for practice. Now we want it to stay put at the object, intended object. So grab it and put it back. Grab it and put it back. And for the first day, all the day long, this will be just your work. Grab it and put it back. Grab it and put it back. Otherwise, you will not be able to develop that skill. Once the mind stays there for a while, then peacefulness and happiness comes in as a byproduct. Because the mind spills all the energy that the citta has with going here and going there. Now when the mind doesn't go here and doesn't go here, there, then we have a lot of energy. And that energy makes us feel happy and content. And then in the end, once we develop that skill, once we've been into the deep state of samadhi or in the apana samadhi, when we come out, we feel like we are completely refreshed. Like we have taken a sleep for 12 hours. Completely refreshed. And then we can use this kind of concentration or this kind of mindfulness to put it to work. Because from the Eightfold Path, that is the third call. Sila was the first one. Samadhi is the second one. And Panya is the third one. Panya means wisdom. Wisdom, it's not the kind of knowledge we get from books. It's not the kind of conclusion we draw from books. It's the wisdom to look at one's heart or to teach one's heart. See how this is. See how this is. Do you understand it? Look at it. So we have to be at the level of the heart to develop wisdom. Wisdom is not any kind of conclusion. Wisdom is not any kind of interference. Wisdom is the true knowingness of the heart, the understanding nature of the heart. You can call it insight. Sometimes you might have had some insight. Insight, you cannot interfere. Is the right word? Interfere from your knowledge. It's not a conclusion you can draw. Wisdom is something that comes directly out of the heart. So we have to be at the level of the heart. So we have to teach the heart to understand what it sees. So when we see something, when we look at something, for instance, when we look at a feeling, a pleasant feeling or an unpleasant feeling, we look at it, we observe it very closely. We observe it with mindfulness. And we don't draw any conclusion that this is a pleasant feeling or an unpleasant feeling. We know it already. We don't have to conclude. Wisdom is something we have to learn the same way as the way of concentration. It's a skill that we have to learn. Any kind of apprentice, any kind of job we do, we will be an apprentice for a while. So we have to learn the job. So we have to learn the skill to develop wisdom. It's not coming automatically. If you do not develop it, neither samadhi nor wisdom comes automatically. They come only when we develop. For wisdom, you have to know, or you should know. Just imagine people, a whole group of people sitting around a fire. And they are discussing. There are 4 or 10 or 20 groups that are discussing, sitting around this fire and discussing if the fire is hot, warm, or cold, or anything in between. They have done that for the last 20 years, and this group thinks it's hot, this group thinks it's cold, this group thinks it's warm, and so on. But never, no one of them has ever touched a fire. So somebody, a more clever person, comes and looks at it for a while and thinks, why are they discussing it all the time, what the fire is like? Just grab in the fire and we will know. Once he has grabbed in the fire, he doesn't need to convince all the other people what the fire is like. He knows for himself and then he just leaves. That is wisdom. Wisdom is not any kind of interference. He just knows. He doesn't need to convince other people what the fire is like. He has experience from itself. So wisdom is the experience of the heart. So when we set the heart on the task to develop wisdom, we set it on the task to develop the ability to understand at the level of the heart. What is pleasant feeling? What is unpleasant feeling? What is thought like? What is body like? What is this like and what is that like? That's a path of wisdom. We have to teach the heart. So we have to show the heart over and over and over again. This is pleasant feeling. This is unpleasant feeling. This is the body. This is thinking. This is memory. These are the 5 khandhas. Until the heart makes click and understand, and then it lets go. With our mind, we can persuade ourselves not to do this because we see it has a devastating effect on us, but once, sooner or later, it will come back again. Our mind can control, we can control our emotions and things for a while with our mind. But the heart has the utter control. The moment it understands something, it's just disinterested. There's no interest in touching this anymore. It's just like the hand, you know, that is put into the fire. It's not going to touch this fire anymore. In the moment we know that what burns our heart, and this is what we have to show our heart, whatever upsets our heart, makes it angry, makes it envy, or makes it whatever. Upset, just upset. Once the heart sees what upsets it, it lets go of it. And that thing will never come again. That is the way of wisdom. That's why wisdom only and only is the way to deliver. But without samadhi and without sila, we will not get there. We cannot just build our house on one column. We have to build it on all 3 so that it becomes stable. We cannot just raise one of the columns. We have to raise them all together. So with mindfulness, we will notice that our sila is broken. So we will fix it. With wisdom, we will fix it, that we don't break the sila anymore. With mindfulness, we will know that our concentration is not good enough. So with wisdom, we will fix it, that we can get over the syndrome. And with mindfulness, we can investigate. And wisdom, we get out all the hindrances that come along the path. So, these three columns have to develop in, it's not tandem, but all three at the same time. Actually, there's a fourth column. The fourth column is the prerequisite for being able to go along the path. And the fourth column is something that has been quite lost in the West, in Western education, because it is gratitude. Be grateful for what one is given. Gratitude towards the parents, gratitude towards the teachers, be it spiritual teachers or worldly teachers. Gratitude towards the person who gives us work or gives us money or gives us help. We think in the West, this is our right. We have done so much, this is our right. So we are not grateful for the things that we receive. So if you receive something that is not pleasant for us, we will get angry. Or we will find the person who is guilty for that. And that upsets, of course, our heart. So gratitude is one. Respect. Respect towards the parents. The parents have put up at least 15 years of their life to feed us, to get us through work, and to be able to stand alone in the world for ourselves. How much have they put up with us? With our tears, our cries, our anger, because we didn't get what we want. So be a little bit grateful and have a little bit of gratitude for them. The Lord Buddha says about the parents, they have done something that we, even if we try the whole life, we cannot repay. So what is the last? Generosity. Generous, being generous. Any one of these. Generosity, gratitude, and respect are a prerequisite for our practice. For instance, generosity. When we give something, and normally it's material things, when we give something, we have to let go of something. Now when we go the spiritual path, to give away material things is much easier than to let go of an opinion and of one views and of one conviction. So if we don't train that with material things first, and for some of us it's pretty hard to let go of material things because we think they belong to us. And how much more do we think our views and opinions belong to us? And if we want to have any kind of success on the spiritual path, then we have to learn to be generous and let go of these things. So that's why generosity in the material way or in the worldly way is a pre-training of the spiritual path. It's the same thing, respect or gratitude. Whatever is given here to you, it's given free. We don't charge anything. We don't charge you for staying here. We don't charge you for the food or for the lodging. And we don't charge you for the Dhamma. We don't even charge you for the Dhamma books. They're all given for free. And the teacher who teaches you, Tonacha Mahabua, he comes out every morning and teaches the people. In the afternoon, he sometimes comes out. When he is in Bangkok, he gives a talk 3 times a day. He does that out of metta. Out of metta, out of loving kindness for the people. So people who listen to his talks should be having the feeling of gratitude towards the person who gives his whole life to help us understand, to help us get over our difficulties, to help us to get our life in order. So that's where gratitude applies to the spiritual path. And respect, it's the same thing. If you do not respect, for instance, our parents, if you think we are cleverer than our parents or better than our parents, if you think that we are cleverer than our teachers, be it worldly teachers or spiritual teachers, we will not be able to learn anything. As long as we think that we are cleverer, we will not be able to listen to what they say. And we will not be able to follow their advice. That's why respect is an important factor on the spiritual path. Respecting the teacher. What he says, at least try to do it. Try to put it into practice. That is the respect you pay for your teacher. If you don't get the results that you talk, that he talks about it, then he either corrects your practice or you find out that he just talks about something that he doesn't even understand himself. And then you can have another teacher. So there are quite a few teachers who talk about things that they even don't understand themselves. But you will find out along your practice. Because once you're stuck somewhere in your practice and you want to find the solution to get over the syndrome, you will find out if the teacher has cross that hindrance or not. Because if the explanation he gives you is sound, then he knows what he's talking about. If it's just, you know, I think you should do this, or I think you should do that, or I heard these people did that, or this people did that, or the Lord Buddha said this, or the Lord Buddha said that, then he doesn't even know for himself. So how can he guide you the right way? A person who has gone the way is the best guidance if you want to go the same way. So Tanacha Mahabua, for everybody who wants to reach Nibbana, is the best guide because he is there. He has gone all the way and he has crossed all the differences, all the difficulties, and he has crossed all the streams that were hindrance and all the mountains that were the hindrance to his path. So for people who want to go that way to the end of Nibbana, that is the best guide. The Lord Buddha said about a Kalayana Mitta, a spiritual friend, it's whole of the life. It's not just a part of the life. Because Ananda asked the Lord Buddha, if a Kalayana Mitta, a spiritual friend, is half of the spiritual life. And then the Lord Buddha replied, don't say so, Ananda. A spiritual friend is the whole spiritual life. Because he can show you the way. He will admonish you if it's necessary to admonish. He will encourage you if it is necessary to encourage. And in our terms, or in the forest tradition here in Thailand, the Achan or the teacher is that spiritual friend. So he will look for your needs in your spiritual practice. So when he sees you go the wrong path, then he will admonish you. He will admonish you 1 or 2 or 3 times, and if you don't follow, he will kick you out. Because then it's a waste of his energy. And you're not willing to listen. And that's why you're staying here. If you not want to listen to what is said here or what is taught here, There are so many different places where you can go where something else is taught. You don't need to stay here. If you want to learn what is taught here, then you're willing, or then you're welcome to stay. So more or less I gave a quick overview of the path, of the practice, as it's done here, or the most important thing that we need to know for our practice. So in the first place, we need to stop our engine running. That means we need to stop the mind going here and going there. Bind it to the pole. Fix it to the pole. Until the mind sees it cannot escape. Because the moment it escapes, we grab it by the tail and put it back to the tower. And once it knows it, once it sees that it cannot escape, then it will go to rest. And that is our first task. Because with a restless mind, any kind of investigation is useless. If you cannot concentrate on one object for just 2 or 3 seconds, how can we investigate an object? How can we see how this whole thing works? If we investigate an engine, for instance, the engine of a car, and we look at it only for 3 seconds, how will we be able to understand how this engine is working? We will not. Then we look again and look again and look again and miss all the important connections, miss all the important parts. So if we want to investigate, then we have to investigate when doing investigation. We have to have the ability to stick to our task. It is like a scientist who makes an experience. He has to observe this experience for all the time, from the beginning to the end, only then he will understand. If he needs to go to the toilet in the time in between, then he misses it. If he needs to drink something, he misses it. He misses the most important thing. So he has to do the experiment over again. Only if he understands from the beginning till the end, if he can follow that, then we will understand how our mind is working. And in the next time I will tell you more about this. But for today, it's enough.
Sorry, that is a repetition of Buddha, Buddha, Buddha. Can I, in the past, I used to practice Buddha, Dhamma, Sangha, Buddha, Dhamma, Sangha. Is it okay or must we speak around what Buddha? Because I come here, I practice, so far I practice only one word, Buddha, Buddha.
Mm-hmm.
Always after, I don't know how long, and then it seems like the word Buddha disappear. And then I just have the breath, and then I call back Buddha, 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 okay? Keep on disappear. But if I keep on practicing Buddha, Dhamma, Sangha, then I can speak for very long, maybe for about 45 minutes, even more.
Well, you can, if your mind is that wild, you know, you can use it, but use it only for the beginning. Because there are 3 points.
Okay.
Buddha is Buddha, Dhammo is Dhammo, Sangha is Sangha.
Mm.
And you will not get to 1 point at once.
Okay.
And that's where you want to get.
So,
you're better, you know. You can try out everything, you know, that works for you. But in the end, you have to remember. You have to stick to one thing. And if your mind is not willing to stick to that, then you have to force it. And that force it is, you know, grab it back and put it there. It's the most simplest task, and it's yet so difficult.
Thank you very much.
Yeah, well, every one of us had to go to this experience. Everyone who starts this practice has to go there. I remember it was not easy. It is not easy. So you just have to find a way, you know, to persuade to just to stay with this object.
Today I managed to sit 1.5 hours.
Well, for you, you know, here, it's, if you can do a long walking meditation, then it's good.
I did long walking for 2-3 hours before.
And then you'll just repeat the same thing, Buddha, Buddha, Buddha. If you do walking meditation, if you do sitting meditation, you just repeat Buddha. You just don't concentrate on anything else. When you're eating, you do the same thing.
But eating, I heard eating, last time they teach us eating, then you see the rice, scooping, mixing, scooping.
Do Buddha.
Just do Buddha.
Yes.
You don't do that.
Yes, then because then you see it also. Oh, this is nice and this is beautiful. Is there some more of it? But if you do your Buddha, 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 you don't think you just eat as much as you need. And when you're full, you know, you stop. You're not interested about the food that you eat. That's why everything here in this monastery is done very quickly, very fast, very mindfully, and very quiet. Just not to let the mind go out into an extraneous thinking. When we sit there and eat, you know, we just have the time, you know, to get about 80% of the before we get full. Most of us, you know, eat 50%, 40%, 60%, because the time is not enough to chew. You just want to get enough, you know, that you can stay on for that day. For lay people, it's a little bit different. And I think in the women area, it's a first-class restaurant where you where you stay for half an hour or 1 hour and look at all these things. And that's why all these complaints come from the kitchen. Oh, today we didn't have any sweets, and today we didn't have any this or any vegetables or this or that. You have too much time, you know, to eat. For the men, it's not. Because they're eating in the sala, and they have, you know, they have a little bit more time than the monks. But you know, as the moment Panachan, you know, starts talking, they have to finish as well. So they cannot indulge too much.
So you are there no trace going into the men's area, like
no.
But why? That's for the ladies.
Because they have more women. Right? Normally the people who come here to practice in terms of men are not more than 8 or 9. So it's much more comfortable. Because to send all this food down to the kitchen, you know, it is a big hassle for us. We have to make trays for this kuti and that kuti and that kuti and that kuti. You know, if it just would be ten people staying in the kitchen, they would just eat in the sala the same way. And that would give us a big relief. Because we actually do have to distribute the food and send it to the kitchen and make sure that there's no complaints coming back. When are you leaving?
On Friday.
When was the German meeting? On Thursday. I don't know about. And maybe tomorrow it's difficult. Manun, Padimok, Rungni, Ciao. ไม่ใช่ตอนไปนะ
ตอนเช้า
อนเช้านะ
น่าจะเป็นตอนเช้าแล้วน้องตาอยู
่ใช่ so we can try to have tomorrow meeting at 1 o'clock but it might happen that you have to wait if the Patimokkha is shifted to 1 o'clock then you have to wait until 2 o'clock or 2:15. And then I talk a little bit more about Anicca Dukkha and investigation. So now just try for the moment, you know, just to calm the mind. Just this simple task. Why is it so difficult? You've done thinking all your life long. Now stop it for a while. Give the mind a rest. Give it a break. Just always say, give me a break, give me a break, you know. So give the mind a break. Okay? So if there are no more questions, then I close up.
I notice when I meditate and I stop putting my focus on external objects, I'll notice places in my body that are more constricted or tense, like chest or forehead. Should I just ignore that? And just keep focused on the object?
Okay. For the moment, yes. As I said, the only time to switch is if that it becomes too... If you cannot concentrate on your object anymore because the pain or the hindrance is too big, then you investigate the hindrance. But be careful. If you force your concentration too much, there will be negative side effects. Yeah, it's like, you know, you're riding a horse. If you force it too much, you know, it will break out. And it throw you out. And, you know, that's the hell. So don't force it, you know, just grab it at a time and put it back. That's where the effort goes. It doesn't go into pushing it, you know, to pumping it. And the side effect will be, you know, something like aches in the brain, or aches in the head, or aches in the back, you know, if you force it too much. Be a bit more gentle, but be determined, you know, just to pull it back, you know, it's just a little, yeah, just go back. It's the nature of the mind, you know, to go out. So we have to make it or train it in a different direction to stay on. So, more questions?
I have a question.
Yeah.
It's theoretical, but you can refer me to some books if you don't want to answer. Whatever. Somebody asked Lumta about the four types of Arahantship. And as far as I know, I know only two. Can you clarify the other two? There are four types of Arahantship.
Well, what do you know?
Well, he said the realization that he has is the full
Arahantship is the Lord of Buddha.
Yeah.
And to my knowledge, but that is only knowledge, you know, and my memory is so bad. It depends on the paramis that you have developed. And the perfection of the paramis. But it might not be the case. I've heard him talking about that. So if I hear it again, you know, I'll let you know.
Where can I read that?
Well, in his Thai books. Yes. I don't think it's in it might be in the scripture somewhere. But where, I don't know. I haven't come across it. So it might be in the Abhidhamma, it might be in any kind of text, you know, in the Anguttara Nikaya or something like that. He has studied Pali, so I don't know.
I don't have access to these books.
Yes.
If you can ask somebody.
Why do you want to know anyway? Get there and then you will know. You know, this curiosity.
Somebody else.
You know, does it help? Luisa, does it help you?
No, I understand, but
for me, it's important, you know. Yes, for me, it's important. Not just like to pass the exam.
Yeah, you're right.
How good I pass it, I don't care. I just want to pass.
Yeah. I know. It doesn't give me you know, better understanding.
No.
But it's a curiosity.
Yes, and that is the problem, you know, for us at the moment. And I told you, in the next 3 weeks, I don't want your mind seeing going anywhere else. Then in the practice of developing wisdom. In 3 weeks you can ask, but now just restrain the mind. Don't think about these things. They are all external things. You know, we all know we have three basic colors: red, green, and blue. We know it from our TVs. And what do we see now on our TV? We see not only red, green, and blue, but we see millions of colors. But if we only see red, green, and blue, you know, we get bored. Wouldn't we? Because we don't see any distinction. And that's the same thing with this whole universe. When we put everything back onto where it originates from, and it originates from the five colors, Rupa, Vedana, Sanya, Sankara, Vinaya. That's where the whole world, the whole universe arises from. Everything that you see. Memory, Sanya, is memory and associations. Sankara is thinking. Vinyana is consciousness. Vedana is feeling. And Rupa is the body. And only these things really exist. It's like red, green, and blue. But what do you see? And we are always fascinated with what we see on TV. Once we pull it back into the three strings that go into the TV, red, green, and blue, we are not fascinated anymore. So the magician that makes all these colors out of it, makes all this universe out of it, we have to investigate and we have to go beyond the stage and look at its tricks. Once we understand its tricks, we are disillusioned. And that's the end of the matter. We are not pulled by this trick anymore. Once we've seen how he makes this trick, we are not pulled anymore. And that's the end of the matter. We don't fall for the tricks anymore. But for the moment now, we are all falling for these tricks. Falling for these chickens or leaves or food or whatever it is. Okay? So now I'll finish. And that, Luisa, yeah? 3 weeks, you know? And I boil you up. Okay? Use it wisely.